Proverbs is where we're at. Proverbs chapter 17. Working our way through a number of one-off Proverbs. They kind of come in bunches as far as the topic, but this is still last week's study because I had expected to get through Proverbs 17 last week. Didn't happen, so we pick up in Proverbs 17. It starts out by saying, "Better is a dry morsel in quietness therewith than in a house full of sacrifices with strife." Sacrifices, a lot of the sacrifices were fellowship offerings where you would take and offer up an animal, the priest would eat part of it, the nasty bits would be burned to God, and then you'd get a piece to take home. And it would be the idea of a communion, a fellowship between you and God, like you're partaking of the same thing. A house full of sacrifices is a wealthy one, lots of meat on the table. Solomon says it's better to be in a quiet house where there's nothing but a dry crust of bread than in to be in a table laden with meat, but all kinds of strife. And having been in both, thankfully most of the house full of strife was at friends' houses growing up. I'd take the dry bread rather than the uncomfortableness and the arguing. Verse 2 says, "A wise servant shall have rule over a son that causes shame, and shall have part of the inheritance among the brethren." The point is that character and integrity of a wise servant will position him in a place above a son. That more than just position or an inherited place is someone who has character and integrity. Even if you start as a servant, you'll end up as one of the children. Verse 3, "The refining pot is for silver and the furnace for gold, but the Lord trieth the hearts." The refining pot for silver and the furnace for gold. When you talk about precious metals like silver and gold, the value is set really by two things. One is the scarcity, right? Nobody gets too worked up about, you know, "Oh, I got 10 pieces of lead for..." No. But gold or silver being scarcer metals are worth more. The other thing is the purity. The more refined, so that you are getting solid gold or solid silver, is worth more than a mixture. And the refining pot, the way they would purify it is they would put it in a you know, some kind of a vessel that would take a lot of heat, and they'd melt it down until it was liquid. And as they boiled it, and as they boiled this metal, the impurities, the junk in the metal would bubble up to the top. And then they would have an edge where they would just skim the crud off the top and continually skim it and boil it and skim it. And from what I read, the way that the refiner would know that he had a pure metal was when he could look down into the pot and see his reflection. And you think about the analogy for us as a Christian, as God is working in our lives. I mean, I don't, to be honest with you, I'm not all that fond of having extreme heat placed in my life, you know, because that's really how the junk gets out, right, is when the heat gets turned up and things start to bubble out that aren't necessarily visible on the surface. But it's kind of like, I guess it's kind of like a tea bag. You never know what flavor you got till you stick it in hot water. And it's the same way with people. But then when that boiling and that agitation comes, the junk can come out, and then he can skim it off until ultimately, when we see him, we'll be like him because we'll see him face to face. And that's kind of the point. The Lord trieth the hearts. He doesn't just try the actions. You know, that's why Jesus taught and said, you know, "You've heard it said, you shall not commit murder, but I say unto you, if a man's hated his brother and he's guilty of murder," that it isn't just outward actions. Because Jesus said, if you've already had the inward thoughts, the inward desire to do it, all you've lacked is opportunity. And the Lord is the one who tries the hearts. "A wicked doer giveth heed to false lips, and a liar giveth an ear to a naughty tongue." Naughty. "A wicked doer gives heed to false lips. A liar gives ear to a naughty tongue." And we look at the Ten Commandments, and you know, one of the ten, "Thou shalt not bear false witness." On one hand, certainly that is you shall not lie, you're not to be telling falsities. But I think you could say it just as easily, thou shalt not bear or thou shalt not put up with a false witness either. And how many times do we have somebody speaking slander, speaking gossip, and yet we put up with it because we don't want to say the uncomfortable thing like, duh, I don't want to hear that. Duh, I don't, la, 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 I don't want to hear that. Well, the one who gives heed to false lips and gives ear to a naughty tongue would be the wicked doer and the liar. So perhaps we shouldn't bear false witness, eh? Whoso, verse 5, mocketh the poor, reproaches his maker, and he that is glad at calamity shall not be unpunished. Whoever mocks at the poor, and of course Jesus was the one who said the poor would always be with us, but when we make fun of, when we mock, when we tease someone for being poor, and for me, I think grade school was probably one of the cruelest places I'd ever been because of the way that I and some of my friends treated people who had less and only had one or two changes of clothes and were wearing, you know, the less cool brands. Well, that's a reproach to his maker, because the poor and the rich are both made in the image and likeness of God. And he that is glad at calamity shall not be unpunished. That's a difficult one, because our society, specifically with our movies, train us to be glad at calamities. I mean, they set us up for the whole movie to want someone to die in the most painful, horrific way possible. He's a bad person. He's a bad guy. He's done bad things. And so they bring us to the point where we want to see him get it in the end. I used to be, when I was younger, a big fan of the Steven Seagal movies, because he always made sure that they died in the most horrific, bone-crunching, terrible ways you could imagine. I mean, every movie was a new way to make someone pay. And you're like, yeah, get him. But, you know, God is the one who says, I take no pleasure in the death of the wicked. I don't want to see them die in their sin. I want them to repent. These are kind of close to home. Where's some ones about, like, the fool and the sluggard? We got to get to those, because this is... Children's children, there we go. Children's children are the crown of old men, and the glory of children are their fathers. Man, there's nothing like a grandkid to make a grandpa crow. And the glory of children are their fathers. In a godly family, that's true. I love my dad. I thought he was the most awesome thing in the world. Excellent speech becometh not a fool, much less do lying lips a prince. It's... excellent speech on a fool is unexpected, because it almost never happens. I mean, you just don't see it. To actually hear a fool say something excellent in speech, it's almost like it doesn't fit. And neither should lying lips fit a prince. Unfortunately, our princes these days, that's how they get to be our princes, is by lying lips and telling us that they'll give us whatever we want. They'll make sure that, you know, they'll reduce taxes and get more jobs. Never seems to happen, though. A gift is as a precious stone in the eyes of him that hath it. Whithsoever it turneth, it prospers. A gift, almost in the context of a bribe, but we know that it's like greasing the skids of society. Now, in verse 23, when we finally get there, it's going to be condemned, somebody who's using a gift as a way to pervert justice. It says, he that covereth a transgression seeketh love, but he that repeateth a matter separateth very friends. Covereth the transgression, grace, giving what you don't deserve. The person who is covering a transgression is the one who is seeking reconciliation. Because, you know, you can be in an argument with your spouse. I mean, some of you could. I obviously never argue with my spouse, but I've heard some of you do. You know, and sometimes you can be right, but you can be dead right. Sometimes it's a lot easier and a lot wiser to just say, I'm sorry, I was wrong, please forgive me. Because most likely that's the case. I'm sorry because I was wrong, and I do ask you to forgive me. But the person who is covering, who is seeking reconciliation, they seek love. But he that repeats a matter separates. And you know, gossiping, yakking, especially within a marriage, you know, protect your husband, protect your wife. Don't go running to mom and shredding your husband to mom. A reproof enters more into a wise man than 100 stripes into a fool. A wise man will be corrected with just words, whereas a fool, it doesn't matter how much you beat him. In the law, the Old Testament law, there were opportunities in the law when corporal public whipping, flogging was part of the law. But even the law says 40 was the max. You can't do any more than 40. Paul talks about it in his day with the Romans. Five times he received 40 stripes, save one. They'd only give him 39 as a gesture of mercy. I'm only going to whip you 39 times rather than 40. Here it's saying a fool, it doesn't matter. You can beat him 100 times and he just will not receive. That is the difference between a fool and a wise person, is how easy it is they are to receive teaching, to receive wisdom or knowledge, or especially correction. An evil man seeketh only rebellion. Therefore, a cruel messenger shall be sent against him. I don't like the sound of that. Rebellion. You know, when Saul was disobeying the Lord and Samuel came to him in 1 Samuel 15:22, Samuel says, "Has the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken or to listen is better than the fat of rams." God's much more pleased if you just do what he says than he is if you offer all of these sacrifices afterwards. "For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry." And then you read that sad thing about Saul. It says, "Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he's rejected you from being king." But rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. And it's funny how we judge things. I mean, I remember growing up, and the witchcraft thing was a big deal. Like, we don't, my mom, my dad, God bless them, that's not going to be in my house. There's no Ouija board playing anywhere. I remember being in junior high and trying out for plays. I liked to do that kind of thing back then before it was in conflicting with sports. And I got I tried out for the plays in seventh grade, and I got the lead in the play. And the name of the play was Get Witch Quick. And it was about some witches or whatever. And I come home and told my parents. And they said, oh, no, you're not. You'll be going in and telling the teacher that you're not going to be able to be in the play because it's got witchcraft in it, and we won't have any of that in our house. And I had to go in and, you know, cry to the teacher. I'm sorry, I can't do it. It's, you know, which was great. And I'm not to knock my parents, but what about rebellion? I mean, look at how we weigh things as being some things as being much worse than the other one. And I'm sure none of you guys are going to go home and set up a little Buddha on your shelf and pray to little Buddha. And none of you guys are probably going to go home and sacrifice a chicken to a pentagram. But as far as God's concerned, to have a rebellious attitude and to say, "I don't care what your word says, I'm going to do it anyway," they're the same in God's eyes. Because when you get down to the root of it and you look at witchcraft, I know I've mentioned this before, but witchcraft is deciding, you know what, I don't want your rules, I'm going to do it my way. And I'm going to use whatever supernatural powers, whether it's spells, whether it's potions, incantations, whatever it is, so that I can control my own circumstances, rather than trusting in the Lord and saying, "Not my will, but yours be done," because you see the end from the beginning and you know it's best for me. The Satanism, I mean, the main thing of Satanism is do what thou wilt. It's whatever you want. You do, you make your own way. Well, that's rebellion. It's rebellion against the rules of God. And the evil man seeks only rebellion. And the result of that's going to be a cruel messenger sent against him. Like I said, don't like the sound of that. Verse 12, "Let a bear robbed of her whelps meet a man, rather than a fool in his folly." I mean, you think about that one for a minute. Solomon says, in Maine, we have black bears. And in rule number one with a bear is if you see a bear cub in the woods, run. Just run. Don't, "Oh, it's a cute little..." No. You don't want to be anywhere near that, because if mama comes home and you're near that cub, you're between her and that cub, you are hamburger. That's the end of it for you. So, and here's Solomon saying, you know what? You got a choice. You're walking through the woods. This way, you're going to run in. You're going to come between a bear and her cub. You go that way, you're going to come alongside a fool who's going to bring you into his folly. take the bear. Because truthfully, the bear, the best that the bear is going to do to you is kill your body. But you get wound up with a fool who's going to take you down a moral path that's wrong. The fool's the one who says in his heart there is no God. He can destroy your soul. Whoso rewardeth evil for good, evil shall not depart from his house. The exact opposite of what we are to do, rewarding evil for good. Evil, you know, whatever a man sows, that shall he reap. God is not mocked. The beginning of strife is as one when one lets out water. Therefore, leave off contention before it be meddled with. It's like a crack in the dam, you know? You think of the little Dutch boy putting his finger in the dam there to plug the hole. When arguing, when contention, when strife begins, it's like a little crack and a little stream comes. And it only increases and it only wears away until the whole thing collapses. And in the same way, when you start handling strife, it's like you're starting to let some of the water out of the dam. And once it starts to go, it's pretty tough to pull it back. It's much easier just to leave off contention before it ever gets meddled with. He that justifies the wicked and he that condemneth the just, even they both are an abomination to the Lord. Justifies the wicked, condemns the just. It's like what Isaiah was saying, woe unto you who call good evil and evil good. The Lord really hates that. Really, you know, it's if you're going to be evil, and even God was the one who, you know, said, look, I'd rather have you hot or cold. If you're going to be hot, if you're going to love me, then love me with your whole heart, soul, mind, and strength. But if you're going to be cold, then be cold. I mean, if you're going to be a sinner, you might as well be the best one you can be. You know, go for the gusto. No sense just kind of straddling the line. Because if you're lukewarm, I'm going to spew you out of my mouth. Well, call good evil and evil good is to cause confusion. It's to turn other people astray. It's to confuse what's right and what's wrong so that everybody can be lukewarm. He hates that. It's an abomination. An abomination, it's the thing that makes you want to throw up. It's like drinking lukewarm water. You know that, right? You chug down a bunch of lukewarm water, it makes you want to barf. Well, so is confusing good and evil. Wherefore is there a price in the hand of a fool to get wisdom, seeing that he hath no heart to it? I saw that firsthand for 3 years or so that I was at the University of Maine. There are all kinds of people who had mommy and daddy's tuition money in the hand to go to college, but they weren't there to go to college to learn anything. They were there to pick up a girl or to just get hammered every night. And it doesn't matter whether they had the money for the education, because there was no heart, no desire to learn, they couldn't be bothered. And it's a fool is someone who, even if they have the money to get wisdom, because they have no heart for it, they never will. No desire to learn. Verse 17, a friend loveth at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. A friend loves at all times. There are those who love sometimes, when things are going well, when maybe you've got some money. You know, the wealthy people all have friends like that who love to hang out and be their buddy while they have money to support an entourage. But there are a few who'll be there through thick and through thin. And that's a brother or a sister, and they're born for adversity. Proverbs 27:6, you guys are familiar with that one. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. You can usually tell a good friend from a bad one because a good friend will tell you the unpleasant things even when it hurts, but it's what you need to hear. Like, dude, you're blowing it. Dude, you're getting fat. Whatever. Whatever, you know. Those are the friends you want to strive to have. A man void of understanding striketh hands and becometh surety in the presence of his friend. A person who is empty of understanding, who doesn't have a clue, is the one who will guarantee another friend, another who will become surety, who will guarantee a debt. You remember what it said back in chapter 6 about my son, if you have become surety for a stranger, immediately go and deliver yourself like a deer from the hunter. When you go and you commit to be responsible for somebody else's debts, you're in the position of a deer who's about to, you know, come out and walk in front of a tree stand. And if that's you, you need to run as fast as you can and get out from underneath it. And he says, a person who is empty of understanding doesn't know what he's in for, and he'll sure guarantee a friend. There's a lot of people whose financial futures have been wrecked because they guaranteed a loan from somebody who wasn't responsible. He loveth transgression that loveth strife, and he that exalteth his gate seeks destruction. Loves transgression, loves strife, because they go together. If you love to do wicked things, expect to get a lot of strife in your life. If you don't like a lot of strife and turmoil, anger, fighting, don't be a transgressor, because those things, they go hand in hand. And the person who exalts his gate, he talks arrogantly, he brags about his wealth, he seeks destruction. He that hath a froward heart findeth no good, and he that has a perverse tongue falls into mischief. Pretty self-explanatory. He that begetteth a fool doeth it to his sorrow, and the father of a fool hath no joy. And that's true. You know, a lot of people, I can do whatever I want. I'm not hurting anybody. Well, you know, it affects your family. When you have brothers, we have sisters, you have kids, you have parents who make foolish choices, you suffer. A merry heart doeth good like a medicine, but a broken spirit drieth up the bones. We don't exactly understand how it all works, but there is a connection between your attitude and your outlook and your physical health. When you get tired, I mean, you can go into, you can see it a lot with older people when they fail. You know, one of the tendencies is to get brittle bones, and when they fall and break a hip, they immediately want to get them up, get them moving. People who have a good, happy support system, who have family who come around them, who encourage them, who visit them and things like that, they recover very well. But when somebody is alone, when they've kind of given up the will to fight, it does dry the bones. And it is tied in, you know, the physical with the spiritual, the mental, it all goes together. And it's interesting how we, in this society, sometimes we do an injustice. I mean, there is a time to have, the society likes to think somehow we're supposed to be happy all the time. We're never supposed to be upset. We're never supposed to be depressed. There are times when it's right to be upset. There are times when it's right to be depressed. I mean, obviously, trying to just normalize everything and blunt everything and, you know, prescribe happy pills just to keep anyone from suffering misery. I mean, certainly there is a time when someone is suffering pain, you want to do that, but then if it's because they're suffering pain because they're not right with God and they're suffering emotional distress because they're in grievous sin, well, if you give them a happy pill so that they're happy all the time and they don't have to face their sin, are you really helping them when God is trying to get their attention and instead we're removing that? But a merry heart doeth good like a medicine. It's good to laugh. A wicked man takes a gift out of the bosom to pervert the ways of judgment. Bribes. God's never really big on that. Taking a gift out of the bosom, pervert the ways of judgment. Just hold a few fundraisers. Maybe you can become an ambassador. Wisdom is before him that hath understanding, but the eyes of a fool are in the ends of the earth. You know, the goal, the wise person has a goal, it's to get understanding. The fool, he seeks fantasy. He seeks things that are way off. A foolish son is a grief to his father and bitterness to her that bare him. Yes, absolutely. Not much to say to that. Also, to punish the just is not good, pervert justice, nor to strike princes for equity. He that hath knowledge spareth his words, and a man of understanding is of an excellent spirit. The two sides here that are contrasted are the person spares his knowledge who's wise, which means the fool is a guy who's a rush to tell you everything, never shuts up. Because, and we covered the proverb earlier, that in the multitude of words there wanteth not sin, that the more you talk, the more chances you're going to say something stupid. And also, the man of understanding is of an excellent spirit. The person who has no understanding, that's not wise, is the guy who's quick-tempered, whereas the man of understanding, he has an excellent, calm spirit. You know, there are people like that who just never get mad. You ever run into people like that? And then there are people who drop of a button, boom, they just blow up. I remember going to work down in Philadelphia, and I grew up around my father, and my father was the kind of guy, I mean, I've said it before. I remember working on an engine with him once, and he was working on a rusted bolt, and he had a socket wrench, and he was just driving on that thing for all it was worth, and he snapped the head off of the bolt, and he punched the radiator full on with his fist. Bang, you know, and he pulls his bloody hand back, and he says, "That was unfortunate." And I'm like, wow, you know? And that's what I grew up with. And then I went to work for this guy, and, you know, he's of Italian descent, which has a tendency, you know, no offense, Kelly, but I have a tendency sometimes to be a little higher strung, you know? And I remember doing something at work that he wasn't happy with, and boom! I mean, he just went off. And like later in the day, every time I saw him, I'd be like, you know, okay, what's up now? And that was it. He was just done, you know? But he just would just go in a moment. Well, the person who is of an understanding spirit, with understanding, is a person who has control and doesn't have that quick temper, doesn't lose it at a moment's notice. And I like this one. Even a fool, when he holds his peace, is counted wise. And he that shuts his lips is esteemed a man of understanding. I've been in many meetings like that in business before, when the wisest, smartest thing you can ever do is just go, You just kind of do that little nod or cock your head a little bit, put the hand on the chin, like, and they're thinking, oh, he's really considering things. You know, he must really know what he's talking about. And you're just thinking, I can't wait till this is over. I want to go, you know, see what my email, whatever. I just want to get out of here. But if you just shut your mouth, you seem so much wiser. All right, I want to get a little bit into 18. Through desire, a man, having separated himself, seeks and intermeddleth with all wisdom. Now, this is one of those ones in the King James. What is he saying here? And the New King James says it this way. A man who isolates himself seeks his own desire, enrages against all wise judgment. New Living is even a little more plain. It says, unfriendly people care only about themselves, and they lash out at common sense. The person who separates himself and just wants to get away from everybody, he's doing that through desire, through his own selfish desires. He just wants to be alone. And in doing so, he is raging against wisdom. A fool hath no delight in understanding, but that his heart may discover itself. Now, we think of discover as in to go find something, but that's not what it means. A fool doesn't care at all about understanding. And instead, what he's really interested in is discovering, really is uncovering. It's to just blurt out everything. And we live in a day of blogs and message boards and Facebook posts. And look, I like to, you know, I put statuses every once in a while on Facebook, and I like to see what's going on with people on Facebook. My wife does an education blog for teaching the kids, and other people do blogs, and that's great. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff that just doesn't need to be said in the world, and sometimes it's just a foolish thing to try to just tell you everything you think. You ever been in class with a person like that before that always had to say something back to the teacher? And not because he had an answer, but he just wanted to, I don't know, make you think he was smart or something, and you just want to say, shut up. Would you just, I didn't, you know, I was at a pastor's conference, a senior pastor's conference in California, only time I've ever been. And we go, and it's all senior Calvary Chapel pastors from around the country, and we're in this one on the Emergent Church, and I'm sitting next to Will Cass, and it's like the first day, and the guy up there is a younger guy who's in Hollywood right in the middle of, you know, the homosexual community, and he's talking about Emergent Church and all of that, and he's doing a great job. And one of the pastors behind us is just running his mouth the whole time. He's got a comment to say after this. Everything this guy says, he's got to say something like, oh, yeah, well, you know, my experience has been, or I hear him like, you know, just kind of those, just talking the whole time. And it was really annoying me, you know, really bugging me. But I didn't do anything, of course. But I was sitting next to Will Cass. Will Cass is not that guy, you know. And before the session was over, the annoying pastor got up and left. And I see Will get up and follow him out the door. Now, the guy who left is like 50. Anyways, 50, 60, I mean, 55, maybe going on 60, an older pastor. Will's not that, you know, he's my age or so. And I talked to him afterwards, and I said, you didn't. He said, you're darn right I did. I said, what'd you say to him? And he said, I went up to him and I said, you know, I make, and I forget what the number is, you know, it's a low number, $20-something thousand a year. And I paid $1,000 of my own money to sit here, and I didn't want to listen to your mouth and you wrecked that thing for me and everybody else around you. And the guy completely repented, and he says, you're so right, I am so wrong, which is why he's a pastor, because he repents, you know. But just to have somebody who just always has to tell you what they think, that's the fool. His heart wants to uncover itself. What kind of friend was I? I didn't even speak the truth to the guy. Will went out and I'm one of those fair weather friends, but he loved the guy enough to tell him. And they were great friends. They sat down, had root beer together later on. They were hanging out through the week. The guy was a riot. He was a great guy. He just was having a stupid moment, and, you know, Will won him over. When the wicked cometh, then cometh also contempt, and with ignominy, reproach. You learn some good words in the King James, ignominy. When the wicked comes, then comes also contempt. Disrespect. When evil is there, the point of this one is outward shame comes right on the heels of inward wickedness. When wickedness is there, shame, disrespect, reproach, ignominy, all those things are going to follow. The words of a man's mouth are as deep waters, and the wellspring of wisdom as a flowing brook. Wisdom, deep, not shallow. Wellspring of wisdom, a flowing brook. It's not stagnant. It's not, you know, that nasty pond bog water that's been sitting there and the flies are breeding in it. No, it's running water. It's deep, it's not shallow, and yet it's refreshing and it's pure. It's not stagnant. Wisdom. It's not good to accept the person of the wicked, to overthrow the righteous in judgment. Why? Because God is no respecter of persons. Peter tells us that in the book of Acts, chapter 10. James goes on in James chapter 2 to say when someone comes into church and you got one guy who's dressed nice and looks like he's loaded and you got another guy that's poor, don't kick the poor guy down at your feet and give the nice seat in the front row to the rich guy, but, you know, don't be a respecter of persons. Of course, this is James, who is what? The half-brother of Jesus, who grew up his whole life not knowing that his brother was the Messiah. So when he says something like, you know, if a guy comes into your church and he looks like he's, I don't know, something simple like maybe a carpenter, you never know, you know. So you never know. A fool's lips enter into contention, and his mouth calleth for strokes. Proverbs is one of those books that's great to look at other translations, because some of them really, I like the ESV, the English Standard Version. It says, a fool's lips walk into a fight, and his mouth invites a beating. You know people like that. Every time they open their mouth, somebody just wants to punch them because they're stupid. A fool's mouth is his destruction, and his lips are the snare of his soul. How about this? The words of a talebearer are as wounds, and they go down into the innermost parts of the belly. This is another one of those that there's some question about it. Most of the other translations, they don't say as wounds, but they say they're like delicious morsels or dainties. That the words of a talebearer, if you're reading some of the other translations, they are things that we love to gobble up and take down when someone's gossiping. But I kind of like the King James, because the words of a talebearer, somebody who's giving you gossip, they're wounding you. And you know how that is. There's a lot of stuff. Once you hear it, you say, I wish I didn't know that. I'm going to have a hard time even looking at that person. Why did you tell me that? I didn't want to know that. He that is slothful in his work is a brother to him that is a great waster. The reason why is both of them will end up poor. One wastes his time, the other one wastes his resources. The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous runs into it and is safe. The rich man's wealth is his strong city, and has a high wall in his own conceit. The wise man, he trusts in the name of the Lord. It's a strong tower. The rich man, he trusts in his riches. One is trusting in something that is factual and is solid. The other guy is trusting in something that's shifting. Before destruction, the heart of a man is haughty, and before honor is humility. Both destruction and honor follow, and which one you get, it seems, depends upon your heart. If you're proud, if you're boastful, if you're conceited, destruction. If you're humble, God resists the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. He that answereth a matter before he hears it It's folly and a shame to him. Person comes and makes a decision before they hear both sides of a story, make a mistake. The example that comes to mind, I was here one night and someone brought one of the kids up to me and said, "I have to let you know, Pastor Steve, Elijah bit me." He said, "What? Get over here, boy. What did you do?" You know, and no. First, I'm like, "He didn't." "Oh, he did. He bit me. He showed me. He had marks in the arm. She had marks in her arm." I'm like, "No, he didn't bite you. That, no way. No, no, he bit me." And I'm like, "Get over here. I can't believe you. It was wrong. Why would you bite her? She had me in a headlock and was punching me in the head." I'm like, "Oh, well, wait a minute. Now that changes her." You know, and I've heard things like that. You know, one will come in and, "She hit me." You know, and you can't get all worked up about it because you might find later, "Well, why?" And the other, you ask the other one, "Well, he was on my back, was why." I mean, you hear tales like that. And if you make a judgment, and it's funny, and it's not just with kids, it's with adults too. Come up to you, "My husband is being such a jerk. He is doing, I can't believe it, and I want to kill him." And then, you know, you find the other side of the story. Well, they somehow managed to neglect to tell me that aspect. I usually just say, "Now, let me pray for you." That's, Lord knows the heart. But a person who only hears one side answers, it's a fool. "The spirit of a man will sustain his infirmity, but a wounded spirit, who can bear?" Who can bear a wounded spirit? You can fight back against physical pain. I'm amazed at the people who live with constant physical pain and are actually happy, are pleasant. You know, there are people, I know there are people in the fellowship that struggle with chronic pain daily, and that just grates on you. I don't like to be sick for a day. I don't like to be in pain for a day. And yet, you know, mental stress, a wounded spirit, much worse than physical. "The heart of the prudent gets knowledge. His desire is to get knowledge. And the ear of the wise seeks knowledge." You see, he's got a desire for it, and he seeks it. He's actually acting on it. He never stops learning. That's one of the things I was kind of amazed to find out, that when you graduate from high school, or if you decide to go to college, you graduate from college, that's not the end of learning in life. You don't have to stop reading books after that. It's just you get to pick the stuff you read now. You don't have to let someone else decide what you can learn. I think it's great. We have several book clubs going here. People in the church are reading classics and getting together and discussing them. And that's a cool thing. I encourage you. Pick up some great works of fiction or some historical novels, whatever. Keep learning. "A man's gift, make room for him, and bringeth him before great men." You know, you can, again, you bundle enough donations for the right politician and you can get invited to state dinners and you can become an ambassador. "He that is first in his own cause seems just, but his neighbor comes and searches him." That's like the hearing of judging a matter before you hear it. If you just talk to the first person and all you hear is, "He bit me," if you don't hear, you know, when you start asking a few questions, search out the matter, and you can figure out what the truth is. "The lot causes contention to cease and parteth between the mighty." Old Testament times, the casting of the lot, and we covered this proverb last week, Proverbs 16:33, that the lot is cast into the lap, but the disposition thereof is of the Lord. That, and they would many times seek the Lord and then draw straws to find out his answer. Didn't have the Holy Spirit back then. But, you know, it's wisdom of Solomon with your kids sometimes. You know, "I want to be in the front seat. He got it last time. I want to be, you know, I want to go first. Well, let's flip a coin." You know, because they can't be mad at you if you flip a coin. Then it's 50-50, and there's wisdom in that. "A brother offended is harder to be won than a strong city, and their contentions are like the bars of a castle." A brother offended. Bars of a castle, they're cold, they're hard, they're inflexible. You know, one of the commentators I read said, "Civil wars are always the bitterest." I hate to hear people fighting in the church. I really do. It's never a reason for it. We know we covered in an earlier proverb that contention cometh only by pride. That when there's an argument between two people, especially two Christians, somebody's being too proud to either say, "I'm sorry, I was wrong," or to cover a multitude of sins and seek to reconcile. No reason for it. "A brother offended," I just read that one, "a man's belly shall be satisfied with the fruit of his mouth, and with the increase of his lips shall he be filled. In other words, you are going to eat your words. The question is, when the time comes, are you going to ask for seconds? If you've been giving good words, if you've been blessing people, if you've been friendly, if you've been happy, if you've been kind, yeah, you might want a second helping. That's what's going to come back, pressed down, shaken together. But if you've been nasty, if you've been judgmental, if you've been critical, you'll get to chew on that one of these days. We're going to make two chapters tonight. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. And they that love it shall eat the fruit thereof. They that love it. Do you love to use your tongue? Do you use it for good, for life? Do you use it for death? Again, and every time I come across these verses, it seems like in every week that we've been going through Proverbs, there's been one or two like this. And every time I think about kids. Am I being positive to my kids? Am I loving my kids? Am I saying kind things to my kids? Or am I telling them they're numb? Death and life are in the power of the tongue. And there's been many a kid who's been wrecked because they've heard nothing but bad things from their parents growing up. I love to go to a game. My son played rec soccer, and one of the guys who had some kids playing, I forget their name, but he's a missionary, he and his wife, and they're in town for a while, and they had a couple kids playing, and I love to watch them at the games, because they did nothing but encourage the kids, nothing. Now, even in times when I would be challenging my son out there, like, come on, Elijah, go for the ball, buddy, you got to go for, that's yours, you should have had that one, because there is a time to cheer your kids on to, you know, work hard and try. He'd at times say, that's all right, Elijah, good job, buddy, you know, because he's like, I'm like, look, I'm not tearing him down, I'm kicking his butt because he needs that. This is, you know, this is provoking him to good works. But to have a parent who's always cheering him on, I hate to go to a game and hear some parent just destroy their kids. You ever seen that before where they just yell and are nasty and mean to their kids and you can just see the kid wilt out on the floor? You feel so bad for him. Amen to 22. Whoso findeth a wife findeth a good thing and obtains favor of the Lord. You know, guys, I will say this. There is, if you can only make one right decision in your life, try to marry somebody above your pay grade. I mean, if you can only do one smart thing, pick a good woman. Pick someone that's better than you deserve. Because if you can, man, whoever finds a wife finds a good thing. Find the best thing you possibly can. Don't settle. Ladies, you know, do the same. Marry a spiritual guy. You know, I mean, why? Don't pick somebody and then figure you can change him later. You know? Because he's like, I know he's not a Christian, but he's like one of the best heathens that I know. I mean, he almost could be a good, he would make a great Christian. Well, until he does, perhaps you should wait. You know, pick a spiritual leader. Pick somebody that you can follow. Because you're going to end up following them one way or the other. You don't want to follow them down. And then have grace, because we're idiots, you know that. The poor uses entreaties, but the rich answers roughly. You know, the poor guy, he's humble, he's probably ashamed, he always speaks softly, kindly. The rich guy, he's prideful, thinks he has enough, he answers roughly. It doesn't say that the Lord loves that the rich answers roughly, just that he has a tendency to do so. Finally, a man that hath friends must show himself friendly. And there is a friend that sticks closer to a brother. This one's interesting. A man, the first half, there's a bunch of different, if you have different translations, if you have something other than the King James, yours might say something different. A man that has friends must show himself friendly. The King James gives the impression that if you want to have friends, be friendly. You know, you can't, nobody likes me. Well, you just come in and been a miserable lump. Have you gone out and greeted people? Have you been friendly? You said hi? You've acted friendly? Someone might want to be your friend? You know, that's King James says that. The other versions, ESV says, a man of many companions may come to ruin, but there's a friend who sticks closer to than a brother. That you can have many of a certain type of friend, but there is a friend that's better than that. You can have a bunch of surface friends and still come to ruin because they're only there for the money. The ASV, American Standard Version, says, he that maketh many friends doeth it to his own destruction. But there's a friend that sticks closer to brother. That in going out and getting a lot of, you know, friends on Facebook, I always like to go on Facebook and see how many friends somebody has. I mean, I've probably got 300 or 400, and I don't even know all of them. And I'm picky. I mean, I say no to a lot of people if I have no idea who they are. And then I go say, well, how many people do I know that they already have as friends? Do I know them? And then which ones are they friends with? Nah, they're not going to my friends list. But because I have to look at their status, and, you know, sometimes a fool feels a need to tell you everything in his heart, and I don't want to read that. But too many friends, lightweight friends, could be your own destruction. The New Living says there are friends who destroy each other. Some of you had friends like that. Oh, yeah, they're my friend, but they led me astray. But a real friend sticks closer than a brother. I like all of the versions end the same way. There is a friend that sticks closer than a brother. And certainly, there is one who was called the friends of sinners. One who said, you know, servant doesn't know what his master is doing, but I don't call you my servants. I call you my friends. That's a friend worth having. Amen? Let's pray. Father, forgive me for being foolish so often. Lord, I can pick up any chapter in this book of Proverbs and see myself in some of the negative verses. Lord, I pray, and I'm sure I'm probably not the only one. Sometimes I get frustrated because I'm not as much like you as I would want to be. Lord, I pray you would do the work in me and all of us that you need to do. Lord, that your Spirit would continually work on us and help us not to get proud or foolish or lazy or stupid. But Lord, help us to be in your word and to seek your wisdom. And Lord, fill us with your Spirit. Change our hearts that we would have a heart after righteousness and knowledge and wisdom, and Lord, a heart like yours. I pray you would bless my brothers and sisters. You'd fill them with your Spirit. Give them peace. I ask it in Jesus' name. Amen. Grace and peace, guys.